from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Dan Burke talks with Jimmy Akin about the recent string of media distortions of Pope Francis. In the second half of our program, Dan talks with Catholic Connections' Teresa Tomeo. She is in Rome this week, meeting with the Pontifical Council for the Family. Teresa will step away from her meetings to talk with us about the influence of secular media on the family. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Dan Burke, Executive Director of the Register. Hey, Dan.
It's great to be with you, Tom.
And you, my friend, our first guest, another friend, Jimmy Akin, a native Texan who grew up nominally Protestant but then experienced a very powerful conversion to the Catholic faith. His conversion story, A Triumph and a Tragedy, is published in Surprised by Truth, one of my favorite books. Besides being an author, Jimmy is senior apologist at Catholic Answers. He is a contributing editor to Catholic Answers magazine and a weekly guest on Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy's been following the secular media coverage of Pope Francis. He's here to share what he's been observing. Jimmy, welcome back to Register Radio.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, Tom, Jimmy is also the lead writer for the Register's media distortion debunking unit.
Oh. I don't know if
he just found that out this morning.
Very good.
The show. Jimmy, we're glad to have you back to dig into these issues. Is it just me, or does it seem like there's much more media distortion with Pope Francis than there was with Pope Benedict?
I think that's somewhat debatable. Actually, there was quite a bit with Pope Benedict when he first was elected. I was thinking about it the other day, and after studying my memory for a few minutes, I could tick off quite a number of cases where there had to be clarifications and things of things that Pope Benedict said after the media got a hold of them. And some of them were actually much worse than anything that's happened yet with Pope Francis. Undoubtedly, the biggest of them was the Regensburg speech,
right,
which was so taken out of context and distorted by the media that there were riots in the Muslim world and people died.
Yeah, I remember. You're right. That was a huge issue that had slipped out of my my memory. But yeah, and we covered a lot of those distortions in the Register with you at the helm of many of those debunkings, if we want to call them that. Well, let's cover the current distortions as much as we can on the show today. The list that I have that you've written about for us is, did Pope Francis say that atheists don't need to believe in God to be saved? Did Francis say it's okay to live a homosexual lifestyle? And did he say that he's going to eliminate the discipline of priestly celibacy? So dig into the first one for us. Or do atheists need to know Christ to be saved?
Well, this is one that's come up a couple of times. He's been quoted by the press or insinuated by the press to have said that atheists don't need God to be saved, that they just need to observe their conscience. And in both cases, the press has taken it farther than what the Pope actually said. He's actually been very measured in what he said about atheists and salvation. And I think one of the reasons for that is he's not wanting to go beyond the Church's actual position. If you look in the documents of the Second Vatican Council, if you look in Lumen Gentium, section 16, you'll see the Council Fathers reviewing the status of various different non-Catholic groups, and they eventually arrive at a group that they describe as those who have not yet arrived at an explicit knowledge of God. And they say that God does give such people the helps needed for salvation, but they want to say that any elements of grace or truth that these people who don't yet know God have are preparations for the gospel so that they might at length find salvation. And so the council doesn't say that atheists can be saved without believing in God in this life. I think they left that as an open question for Catholic theologians to discuss. Can there be atheists who are innocently ignorant the way there can be other non-Catholics who are innocently ignorant and end up saved? They left that as an open question, but they didn't actually say that atheists could be saved in innocent ignorance without a knowledge of God of any kind.
So what exactly did Pope Francis say in this case?
What he said was two things. He emphasized that God's mercy is available to everyone who turns to him with a sincere heart and repents. And he indicated that atheists do indeed need to follow their conscience. But he didn't say, and merely following your conscience is enough. He also had the reference to God's mercy being there if you repent. And so he seemed to be, if anything, leading them to consider the option of repenting and turning to God.
Absolutely. This is Dan Burke with Register Radio. We're talking with Jimmy Akin about media distortions regarding recent comments from Pope Francis. Jimmy, let's hit the second one of the three this morning, and that is the claim that Pope Francis has said that it's okay to live a homosexual lifestyle. Did he really say that?
No, he didn't. In that case, he was making remarks on a plane during an interview on the way back from World Youth Day, and he said if someone who has homosexual attraction is sincerely trying to follow God, who am I to judge? Well, okay, if they're sincerely trying to follow God, that would at least throw open the question of what should they be doing sexually. And he made some remarks in an interview with America Magazine that was published yesterday, which clarified this a little bit. His basic strategy is to proclaim Jesus Christ first, because he says that's what's compelling, that's what makes the heart burn, like with the disciples on the road to Emmaus. And then after someone has had a compelling encounter with Christ, then these other questions about what areas of my life do I need to reform will be taken care of in due course. And so he's not denying the church's teaching on homosexuality. In fact, he points out in the America interview that I said exactly what the catechism says, but he's putting the accent on a different syllable by insisting on the proclamation of Jesus Christ first and then moral issues in their due time.
You know, I find this aspect of Pope Francis incredibly refreshing. I did review the America article as well. And when you're speaking to the world about difficult issues, if you lead with accusations or the most controversial issues regarding common morality problems or whatever, you're going to get turned off. But I think if you lead with the person of Christ, the love of God, the mercy of God, which Pope Francis so eloquently emphasizes, I think, you know, which is what he wants to do, I think you're going to end up finding people leaning in a lot better than when you lead with these other issues. What do you think?
It certainly is a way of trying to skirt the stereotypes that are out there, because it's very easy for people to look at the church and just think, oh, it's an anti-homosexual or an anti-abortion organization, and that's all there is to it. And while, yes, it is opposed to homosexual behavior and it is opposed to murdering babies by abortion, neither one of those is its fundamental core message, which is Jesus Christ.
Yeah, fantastic. This is Dan Burke with Register Radio. We're talking with Jimmy Akin about media distortions. Jimmy, let's go to the third one this morning, and that is, did Pope Francis say that he is going to eliminate the discipline of priestly celibacy?
No, and this one's one of the most bizarre of all of these media distortions. The reason is that Pope Francis didn't say anything about the subject one way or another. He was completely uninvolved in this story. What happened was the papal nuncio, who is in Latin America, who's becoming the new Secretary of State, replacing Cardinal Bertone, he was giving an exit interview to a local news outlet, and he was asked, do you think that the discipline of celibacy could change? And he said, well, it's not a dogma of the church, so it could change, and it can be discussed. But then he went on to downplay any expectations of a change, and he said quite a bit more downplaying the idea that it might change than he said in admitting it is hypothetically possible for it to change. So what you have is a question asked of a completely different person that who actually downplays the idea of a change in the church's discipline on celibacy, and then that gets blown up into Pope Francis may eliminate celibacy. And that's just a incredibly distorted presentation of what actually took place. Pope Francis wasn't even involved.
Yeah. On ncregister.com, our listeners can find each of these three media distortions debunked by you in your blog there. This morning, you've been digging in a bit to, and yesterday, the America Magazine piece. Are you what are your predictions? What do you think are going to be the next launch points for the media to get wrong about the Pope there?
Well, the interview with the Pope is rather lengthy. It's like 1,200 words, and so there's quite a bit in there that the media could mine if it chose to. Some of it won't be of interest to the general media because a lot of it, since America is a Jesuit magazine and this was an interview done for Jesuit magazines around the world, a lot of it's asking the Pope about his history with the Jesuit order and how he's the first Jesuit Pope and how does his Jesuit background affect him. And that's of interest to Jesuits, obviously, and to some others, but it probably won't be of interest to the mainstream media. What really attracted them is a reference he made to contraception and homosexuality and abortion. And he said basically what I summarized earlier, that he thinks we need to present the message of Christ first, and then these other things will fall into their natural place. But there is additional stuff in there that the media might want to pick up on, and who knows what they do with it. He does have comments about, for example, the Latin, the older form of the Latin Mass that Pope Benedict allowed to be celebrated on a much more liberal basis, and he says he thinks that was the right decision. But he also emphasizes that he doesn't think people should make an ideology out of the traditional Latin Mass, and that he thinks that the changes of the Second Vatican Council are permanent, and so don't pin your hopes on, you know, going back a century in time and reverting everything to the way it was, because that's not going to happen, and that's not what we're called to do as Catholics. We're not called to simply retrieve the past. We're also called to take what's been handed down to us from the past, but apply it to our current circumstance so that we can be as effective for God in our own day as possible.
Jimmy, as we wrap up the session here, if you could give advice to our listeners about how to understand Francis and get the real story regarding what he said, what would you tell them?
Well, whenever you hear anything reported about religion by the secular press, it's a good idea to be skeptical because, frankly, secular reporters really don't know what they're doing with this subject 99% of the time, and they also are trying to hype things up in a really inflammatory way in order to get ratings and readers and so forth. So the first thing to do is take a chill pill. The second thing to do is find the text of what the Pope actually said and read it carefully, word by word, not filling in things he didn't actually say. And we try to do that for folks at the National Catholic Register's website. I try to do that whenever there's a major papal story, and other people do it too, and so there are good resources for them there.
Jimmy, we took a call just like this on Open Line yesterday. People were calling in and saying, who can I depend on to get accuracy? And we obviously say, you know, since that was pretty much a softball coming straight at us, we said, well, of course, you're going to want to go to sources that you can trust, EWTN, National Catholic Register, Catholic Answers, the Vatican's own website. If people will do just a little bit of research, they can find out what the Pope really said.
Indeed.
Indeed. Well, thank you, Jimmy, so much for being with us and for all the work you do to help bring clarity to the events of the day. And we're grateful for all your work at the Register.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jimmy. When we return, we're going to head to Rome and talk with Teresa Tomeo about the influence of secular media on the family. It is insidious. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
John at Bankovic talks about the National Catholic Register.
I recommend the National Catholic Register to all Catholics who want to discover what it means to live their faith in this our day and time. We get the clear, unbiased news of today because The National Catholic Register takes its cue from the mind and the heart of the church. It really becomes a tool by which we are able to live that abundant life in Jesus Christ and to share that life with others. The National Catholic Register seeks to meet people where they are, seeks to meet people where they are in their walk of faith, where they are practically in their lives at the moment.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome again. It's Tom Price along with Dan Burke here on Register Radio. And it's always great to have our friend Teresa Tomeo on the program. She, of course, is a media expert, best-selling author, and speaker with over 30 years of experience in TV, radio, and newspaper. She is the host, of course, of Catholic Connection here on EWTN Radio and the co-host of the popular EWTN television series, The Catholic View for Women. Today, Teresa is in Rome. She is a speaker at the Pontifical Council for the Family. Buongiorno, T. How you doing?
Buongiorno, Thomas. How are you? It's a beautiful day here in Roma. I'm looking at blue skies, and it's about 81 degrees right
now.
It's gorgeous.
Wow. Teresa, this is Dan. I'm jealous, but we can still be friends. Teresa, our listeners may not be aware of the role of the Pontifical Council for the Family. Can you tell us a bit about their mission in the Church?
Sure. There's a number of different quote-unquote pontifical councils or dicasteries, and what they do is that they promote the individual mission, so to speak, of the Church. We have the Pontifical Council for the Culture. We have the Pontifical Council for the Family, and as you said, I'm at a conference with them right now, and I spoke yesterday. It was a lot of fun. I met a lot of great people. And then we have the Pontifical Council that represents the Academy for Life. So what the Church tries to do is to get people who have a specialty in these various areas. And so for the family, it will be promoting, of course, the rights of the family at the UN to make sure that families, in terms of what we mean by family, the original natural law definition of family, a husband, a wife, and God willing, procreation and children, to represent those causes, not only within the Church, but on a national level. So it really is, I guess the best way to explain it is just a great commission of expert minds that are put together to work for the benefit of upholding family values and also the structure of the family in the Church and in the world.
So you're there attending these discussions and obviously giving a talk there as well. What's on the agenda? What are you all talking about in these meetings?
Well, yesterday we had a series of panel discussions. So we had a panel of journalists, myself and several other journalists who were speaking from around the world. I spoke as the American Catholic journalist and also the journalists with secular media experience. We had a journalist from Africa talking about how the media affects family there. We had a journalist, a columnist from a secular newspaper in Australia who is a Catholic mom with nine children who writes a column about family life. We also had an Italian-American journalist who also was a Catholic and working in the media here, formerly of one of the secular papers, La Stampa. So there was a panel discussion of journalists. There was a panel discussion of experts on other issues facing the family. And so yesterday really was kind of like an overview. What are the major issues facing the family today? And really what we're doing at this conference, Dan and Tom, is looking at what has happened since the Charter on the Rights of the Family, which came out under John Paul II 30 years ago. So where have we been? What have we done to help the family since the Charter came out 30 years ago? If you remember a few years back in 2008, I was a delegate at the Congress for Women, which was looking at the 20th anniversary of John Paul II's Dignity and Vocation of Women document. So what the Church likes to do is to revisit these documents in hopes of looking at the beauty in them, revisiting them, what they originally said, how it's being applied, and what can be done in the future to apply it. And what I really like doing is not only covering these as a journalist, but attending them and just soaking up all the knowledge of these experts in various areas so I can tell people why they need to read these documents. I just heard the tail end of the fantastic interview with Jimmy Akin, and Jimmy saying the same thing, and Tom and Dan, you encouraging them to go to the Church, go to the source, to read what the Pope, to read what the past popes have said about various issues. So that's what we're doing here, in addition to talking about some of the hot-button issues that are facing the family. The topic of marriage, of course, with the attack on the family and marriage has come up. Media sensationalism, media bias, I covered that extensively yesterday. So there's a number of different issues that are facing the family that's being held on the conference. And this morning, Helen Alvary spoke on the issue of women in the world and in the family, which was great.
Oh, she's fantastic. T, how hard is it for somebody to go to the source material? Because that seems to be the ongoing problem that we have. You pick up something from secular media, and we just assume that somebody else has done the heavy lifting without actually looking into it.
It's so easy, and I think especially, Tom, as you said earlier, and again, I heard the tail end of what you were explaining to Jimmy and to our listeners. Really, if you go to EWTN.com, I mean, EWTN.com is such a great resource because you have links to the Vatican, you have links to these hot stories, EWTNnews.com, or even to news.va, which is the Vatican news site, or
sure.
Radio Vaticana. All they have to do is to put in a search for Radio Vaticana, Vatican News. This will come up, and they will actually give you a number of things. They will give you the church story. In other words, the way the church covers the story, the actual truth compared to what the media said. And then they'll also give you the links to the documents themselves or to the actual transcript of the Holy Father's interview or message, whether it's an audience message, whether it's an interview, as it was in this case with Jesuits here in Italy. They will give you the actual translation, but it really is frustrating for me because so many people still, and I don't think they do this with any ill intent, but we are so conditioned, especially in the United States, to go right to what we hear on, let's say, our favorite news radio station. If they're flipping on the local news channel, they want to hear what the weather is, they hear these big headlines about how the Pope is supporting this, that, and the other thing, or changing teaching on this, that, or the other thing. You cannot, I hate to say this, and it breaks my heart, but you simply cannot, for a variety of reasons, which is what I explained yesterday, cannot trust the majority of those in the secular media to give you the full story, especially about what's happening with the Catholic Church. They have an agenda, and they either don't want to know or they don't know. And both of those things are atrocious in terms of if you're still calling yourself a journalist. But it's not difficult. I don't have a theology degree. I have a journalism degree. I just research like anybody else. Go to the source.
Amen. This is Dan Burke with Register Radio talking with Teresa Tomeo in Rome, where she's attending and giving a talk at the Pontifical Council for the Family. All right, Teresa, so you're talking with them about the influence of media on the family. What are the key points that you're working to communicate?
Well, it's interesting. I think this is the Pope's first miracle because guess what, guys? I actually said what I had to say in 15 minutes or less. I know. It's unbelievable,
wow.
But I did it.
Wow.
It's his first miracle. So maybe that'll make news. I don't know. But basically, I had three key points. I had three key elements that I wanted people to walk away with yesterday. First of all, the research. The research about what's happening in the media and its impact on the family. It's undeniable. Whether we're talking about children and violence, whether we're talking about the issue of the gift of sexuality as God has given it to us, whether we're talking about marriage, whether we're talking about pornography, all those things, the research from primarily secular sources is undeniable, so we have to take it seriously. Secondly, I talked about the resources, which we just covered in the last question and answer session. There are amazing resources right at our fingertips in the Catholic Church that we can access. And so we have to make sure that we are putting those resources out there for people to understand and to utilize. And then the final message I had was, what was our response? What do we do as the people of faith? And many people covering this conference, in addition to being active in the laity, are also active. There's judges here. There's lawyers here. It's designed for experts on canon law and others in the legal system. So what can we do in our various professions and our various roles to respond to this media crisis that we have? So I had three key points. I had research, resources, and response.
Sounds like a good talk. Will that be available to us when you get back?
I have a copy of it. If people want to email me, I can certainly post it on my website. And what happens at these conferences is they take the talks of the speakers and they put them into book form. It takes a little bit of time. Usually takes about 2 to 3 months. And you can order them actually through the different pontifical councils. There's one that's available, for example, on the Women's Congress that I attended a few years ago. That's phenomenal that I finally got a hold of and has all the talks of the speakers such as Helen Alvary and others. And this one will also be my talk will be put into that book form. But if people are interested, really just shoot me an email either through EWTN.com or my website, TeresaTomeo.com. It's short, you know, has a lot of statistics in it, but it's fairly short, as I said, about 15 minutes. So I'd be happy to pass it on to them.
Great, Teresa. Now, before we wrap up the show today, I wanted to tell folks about your latest book coming out here soon, which I've had a chance to read an advanced copy, and it's fantastic, called God's Bucket List. Is that available yet for purchase? If not, when will it be?
It will be actually on the bookshelves, Dan, on November 5th through Random House Image Books. You can pre-order it through the end of October. And you know me, I love a sale. And right now what we're offering is a special sale. If you order it through my website, teresatomeo.com, and I know it's also going to be available very soon on the EWTN Religious Catalog. Doug Keck did a really fun interview with me down at the Catholic Marketing Network on Bookmark. But you can, if you order it now, and if before the end of October, you order one, you get a second one free. So God's Bucket List, and you can find the information out on my homepage at teresatomeo.com.
Great work, Teresa. Thank you for all you do for the church. We really appreciate it, and we look forward to having you back to the state safely soon.
Are you traveling soon, T?
We come home, God willing, on Sunday. Our flight leaves Sunday, 7:30 in the morning. We get back to Detroit around 8 o'clock, and then back in the saddle on Monday. We have our Ave Maria Radio Pledge Drive, so I ask for prayers for our listeners. But I'll be back on live at 9 o'clock Eastern to tell our listeners about my experience. And we've also done a number of special interviews we'll be sharing with our listeners as well, so I look forward to that.
Well, fantastic. Well, we will certainly be praying for your safe travels, and hope it all goes well for you. Stay safe.
Okay, guys. Keep up the great work. Thanks.
Thanks, T. Don't forget, you can listen to the show again by going to ncregister.com. Just look for the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio. For Dan, Elena, our producer, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.